I could talk for hours here. I have so much enjoyed this conversation with you. It's like we're sitting together in the family room. And I want to make another comment before we leave. Mm-hmm. If the rest of the professors at Liberty University are like you, those kids are in good hands.
Well, thank you, Chuck. It's been a pleasure being with you today.
Well, yeah, and friends, you've got to get a copy of this wonderful book, $13 to Save America Ministries, How Can I Believe When I Have So Many Doubts? Very, very helpful, very, very kind and loving, but gets right to the issues. And call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Get on our website, saveus.org, write to us, and I want to urge you to become a partner. We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour, even as we're assaulted by doubts. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing. And be a genuine believer. Resolve those doubts. Seek after God with a whole heart. His presence will lead you into victory.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge
you... ...war against the Jews. Now, John has been our guest on several occasions talking about his book, America's Nazi Secret, and basically it goes into the background of the tragic situation that existed during the Second World War. First of all, when a number of Nazi sympathizers in Belarus actually killed 2 million Jews, and then, of course, they were rewarded by being brought here and allowed to get good government jobs and then die in New Jersey. And, of course, as John eventually, working for the Justice Department in the early part of the 1980s, his job was to track down the Nazi sympathizers responsible for killing the Jews, and working for the Justice Department, he learned the story. But another part of the Justice Department was protecting the Nazi sympathizers and rewarding them for their fine job. And, of course, you get in that book, America's Nazi Secret, going into the background of the American corporations that worked very closely with the Germans, not only before the war, but during the war, and built their weapons for them. And the fact that there were Americans in Germany building the weapons for the Germans, for the Nazis, all during the war. And they were never punished for what they did. And, of course, the information has been totally suppressed. And that's the America's Nazi Secret. But then, of course, the secret war against the Jews, and we talked about that last week, and we'll talk about it again tonight. John, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me back.
Well, as my wife said, he is one of the best interviews you have. So, we appreciate having you with us. So let's pick up the story of the secret war against the Jews. Because would you want to just give a brief review of what we talked about last week?
Well, essentially, in my first book, I was told I couldn't write about the Vatican. So my Australian co-author and I found a young man who spoke fluent Serbo-Croatian. We had him pose as a young Croatian fascist from the Ustashi party, and he interviewed the surviving Catholic priests who had smuggled the Nazis out through the Vatican escape route, or rat line, was the term for it, the intelligence term. And once we had that evidence from the priests on lips, then the CIA would let me publish a little bit more. And that book became Unholy Trinity, the Vatican, the Nazis, and the Swiss banks. I was intrigued by the money angle, that it wasn't just Nazi war criminals going after the Nazis, but money as well. And that became the leitmotif for examining the treatment of Western intelligence agencies towards Jews. That we, you know, in public, the American people embrace the democratic state of Israel. We keep electing congressmen and senators who send more of our tax dollars to Israel than just about any other place in the world. But in private, the intelligence community and our State Department had a very different foreign policy. They said whatever Americans might say about liking the Jews in public, it's really in America's long-term interest to have a cheap and consistent supply of oil.
And And of course, you made the point, if Moses had, instead of turning to the left when he came out of off Mount Sinai, had turned to the right, gone over in Kuwait, why, of course, we would have supported the Jews. But
we would have made Israel the 51st state.
Right. We'll be back in just a moment with John Loftus here. His book, The Secret War Against the Jews, we're moving an awful lot of those. People need to read it and understand reality is usually scoffed at. John, you go right ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, the idea is it's really not about ideology. It's not about anything but greed.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Plan to eliminate the Jews, and the Grand Mufti, was the Grand Mufti or was the head of the Muslim Brotherhood recruited units that actually worked for the Nazis, stirring up the anti-communist movement or what?
Well, in those days, the Grand Mufti was the ambassador from Hassan al-Banna and the Muslim Brotherhood.
All right, fine. He represented then the Muslim Brotherhood at that time.
In Berlin, yeah.
Right.
And their goal was because Stalin, of course, at that time was an ally of the British and the Americans. So they were anti-communist, anti-British, anti-American. They were also anti-democracy and anti-Western civilization. So Hitler's concepts of national socialism blended perfectly with the Arab nationalist revival of anti-Semitism that Bana foresaw.
And, of course, that is the Muslim Brotherhood. And I think that people have to realize we're going back to the 1930s. But the Muslim Brotherhood formed in 1928, of course, is still around today. But what people do not understand is that has been, in more recent years, financed first by British intelligence and more recently by the Central Intelligence Agency. So why would we... Well, I'll let you tell the story, and I think...
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Dr. Stan. The British Secret Service convinced the Americans that the Muslim Brotherhood could be used as a proxy army to fight the Arab communists during the Cold War. And so from time to time, we would use the Arab Nazis to fight the Arab communists. Of course, the joke was on us because the chap in the British Secret Service that was selling us the Muslim Brotherhood was a man by the name of Kim Philby. He actually turned out to be a communist double agent. He was sent by Moscow to foist the Muslim Brotherhood on the gullible Dulles brothers and poison our State Department and the CIA right from the get-go. And so, you know, during the Eisenhower administration, then during the early 60s, we actually had Arab Nazi leaders being brought into the U.S. under these covert intelligence programs, just a handful to begin. But in the 1980s, something awful happened. Vice President Bush decided to revive the British program. He intended to use the Muslim Brotherhood to recruit a new generation of anti-communist Muslims. He was using the old World War II Nazis to recruit a new generation of Islamic extremists to become mujahideen, to fight in Afghanistan to throw the Soviets out. And so Congress didn't know it, and the American people didn't know it, but we had old Arab Nazis actually out recruiting a new generation of like-minded individuals. And it turns out that some of those people, the Muslim Brotherhood gave birth to a terrorist group called Hamas, to the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and to Al-Qaeda. So during Vice President Bush in the 1980s, he used the Muslim Brotherhood to recruit a new, younger generation of Islamic extremists that eventually evolved into the terrorist groups that came back and attacked the United States.
But theoretically, of course, they were recruited into the, they were to become the Mujahideen, and they were then to fight the communists in Afghanistan. So you
can justify that. Yes, but you know, that war went from 1979 to 1989, and in 1989, you know, the Americans declared victory, and of course, here's the irony: was the CIA was kept in the dark. We often had two CIAs in this country, one that worked for the Republicans and the oil companies and the State Department, and the other one that worked for Congress and the Democrats. And, you know, and one group never communicated well with the other.
And I think it's so important people understand the CIA is very compartmentalized. I've talked to people in the CIA and read their writings. Very often, members of the CIA will have no idea what the CIA is doing. All they know is just their one little assignment. And that, of course, is the wonderful way by which the people at the very top are able to use certain elements of the CIA against the best interests of our own country, whereas most of them think they're working for our best interests. There are some who certainly may not understand what they're doing, but they're actively working against the interests of our country, at least in my estimation.
I think to be fair, that 90% of the people in the CIA are good, decent Americans, and they believe they're doing what's right and lawful and authorized by Congress, which is to analyze intelligence coming in from around the world. 10% of the CIA believes that they should overthrow governments that are hostile to American oil companies, to put it bluntly. And that has been, sadly, the U.S. foreign policy. And in carrying out that policy, you know, they use groups like the Muslim Brotherhood. We had a guy named Miles Copeland from the CIA, the 10% crowd, and he thought it was just great to use these ultra-right individuals as our proxy army to rattle the cages of those Arab states that were, you know, leaning towards the Soviet camp.
And are you really speaking now using the Muslim Brotherhood and, of course, their proxy who became the Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, I mean, many of the younger second-generation Muslim Brotherhoods thought that the old doctrines of propaganda and education were too slow. they wanted active terrorist measures to bring about the Islamic Revolution more rapidly. And so that's why you had all these splinter groups. But the irony is the Muslim Brotherhood sort of kept in touch with all of them. They were like a giant Rolodex where they would help each of the groups out. So in time, the Muslim Brotherhood as the parent organization looked on all these young upstarts as interesting experiments. They never really cut the ties to Al-Qaeda or to Hamas. In fact, to this day, Hamas remains the official branch of the Muslim Brotherhood in Palestine.
And certainly Al-Qaeda is definitely deeply tied in with Muslim Brotherhood as well.
Oh,
this is
sure.
What people would end Islamic Jihad, and all of them really are worked closely together. But the parent group, at least as far as I'm concerned, is Muslim Brotherhood. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Now that bin Laden's dead, his successor, Dr. al-Zahri, was the head of the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which was a splinter group of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Dr. al-Zahri was one of the early critics of the Muslim Brotherhood, saying, you know, the old fogies, you know, the original Nazis, were just simply too conservative to deal with modern problems. And that's why he founded Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which is one of the five co-founding organizations of Al-Qaeda. So today, an original member of the Muslim Brotherhood, Dr. al-Zahri, is now the head of Al-Qaeda after Obama's death.
And, of course, the amazing thing is, of course, that al-Zahri was actually allowed to come to the United States in the mid-1990s and raise money for that, his organization, even though, of course, he was known to have been involved with the murder of Sadat and never did understand why we would let this man into this country. He was a known terrorist at the time and allowed to come in here in sometime in the mid-1990s.
You know, and I think that goes back to the Vice President Bush's policy of running this covert operation without the knowledge of the CIA. The State Department and, to a lesser extent, the Justice Department were clued in. But we were using money from the CIA's accounts without the CIA's knowledge, and Bush was laundering it to the Saudis and the Pakistani intelligence service to the Muslim Brotherhood in Afghanistan. And after the Afghan war was over, the Saudis did not want the Muslim Brotherhood to come home. They've been living there in exile since they were booted out of Egypt in the 1950s. And so the Americans employed them again in Chechnya and in the Balkans to protect the Muslim populations that were being, you know, massacred by the Serbs. So there was always room for employment. I'm a cynic, Dr. Stan. I don't think that many members of the Muslim Brotherhood really believe in Islam. I think they believe in a paycheck.
Well, you may very well be right, but certainly, at least theoretically, why, of course, this is a radical form of Islam. And this group is used, I think it recruits idealistic young people to it under the name of radical Islam. Whether the leadership really believes in it or not is not important. It is how they are presented and how they attract young people into this radical form of Islamic belief. This is the real danger because, of course, it is a threat, certainly to the West, but it's also a threat to the Muslim world. I mean, it certainly takes people away from just being legitimate Muslims to really want to join this movement where they can be certain they're going to go to heaven, you know, with 72 virgins. And
well,
the only way to do it is to die in battle killing the infidels, and that's you and me.
Well, this is the great Nazi heresy that came out in World War II, was that in the old days, one could not declare jihad except with the permission of the caliph. Well, that ended after World War I, or with the consensus of the Ummah, the consensus of the Arab scholars in the community. Well, Qutb, who was the Muslim Brotherhood's propagandist and theological leader, said, well, from now on, we're going to say that any individual can declare jihad, that it's his duty as an individual, that whenever someone sets foot in the Arab world, he must rise up to defend Islam. And he adopted a heretic cult called the Salafists, or Wahhabis, as they're known in Saudi Arabia. Islam has declared this Salafist group to be a heresy more than 60 times before 1900. But now this tiny heretic cult has become the driving force for terrorist recruitment under the banner of Islam.
Aren't they very closely aligned with the Saudi government? And certainly, because the Saudi government is very closely aligned with our country. And basically, there are a lot of these Imams, Wahhabi Imams, coming into America, going into our prisons and recruiting prisoners there in this radical form of Islam. This is what really disturbs me. Why would we allow something so foolish unintentionally? Go right ahead, John.
Well, I think the reason is that because it was good for votes. The man who was in charge of the Islamic chaplains program was a man named Alamoudi. And Alamoudi...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthy I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
unrest. But then, of course, John is talking then about what's going on, the various elements within the Muslim faith. One of the Sufis, apparently, one of the major Muslims, well, not a major, but a minor Muslim sect, really, of course, respects the right of the Jews to actually be in the Holy Land, the right of the, certainly the Christians to exist alongside the Muslims. But that is not the predominant view, I think, of the, certainly not of the Muslim Brotherhood or their surrogates. And the Muslim Brotherhood is a major political force, one of the few organized political forces in the Near East and the Middle East today, as this whole area is going up today, and all of the existing governments are in threat today of being overthrown. With some of them have been overthrown. Egypt, Tunisia, we're in the process of overthrowing the government of Libya and Yemen, certainly Syria is on the verge of civil war. The Lebanese government has been taken over by the more radical element, and certainly Turkey has moved from being a secular pro-Western state to moving in the direction of the Muslim Brotherhood. The whole area there certainly is beginning to is on the verge, I think, of a great explosion, a transformation, as it were, and the Muslim Brotherhood, which was financed by the CIA and MI6, is playing a major role, and I believe will become the dominant political force. But you don't want to hear what I have to say. You want to hear what John has to say.
Well,
you go right ahead.
I think we're on the same page. The Muslim Brotherhood, for years, you know, they were expelled from Egypt, resettled in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis, of course, belonged to that rare Salafist cult. They call themselves Wahhabists. But the Salafist movement, which was perhaps 1% of the Sunni tradition, and most Sunnis and most Shiites reject what the Salafists say about Jerusalem as nonsense, what the Muslim Brotherhood says as heresy. For example, the Muslim Brotherhood says that Muhammad, on his night journey, rode his horse. Well, he actually rode his horse from Mecca to Medina, a journey which could be done at night on horseback. But they said, no, he flew on his horse to Jerusalem. And that's why, and from there he ascended to heaven. Well, that was a tourist hoax that was made up in Palestine. No Muslim set foot in Jerusalem until, I think, the second caliph, almost a century after Muhammad's death, came to Jerusalem. And ironically, he was aghast at how badly that the Jews were being treated in Jerusalem and restored their dignity. And he took the shell of a Christian church, St. Nicosia's, an eight-sided church, and put a golden dome on top and made that into the Golden Mosque. But he, the caliph, didn't arrive until, almost 100 years after Muhammad's death. So there was no mosque in Jerusalem, so there couldn't have been a night journey. And this is Islamic tradition says, what these extremists are saying about Jerusalem is just nonsense. Of course Muhammad did not fly on a horse, from Mecca to Jerusalem. He rode on a horse from Mecca to Medina. That was the night journey, the recreation of his famous Hajira. And so they kind of laugh at the Palestinians, the Muslim Brotherhood, for this kind of crank stuff. But that's the sort of propaganda that they spread under the Nazis. They learned this from the German masters. And ironically, after the war, MI6 recruited the original German handlers of the Muslim Brotherhood, had them change their name to Arab names and convert to Islam, and the old German Nazis stayed running the Muslim Brotherhood. So it's a thoroughly morally decrepit organization. I'm reading now that the Muslim Brotherhood is actually cut a deal with the government of Turkey. And Turkey will support the Muslim Brotherhood in instituting riots in northern Syria, but the Muslim Brotherhood has promised, that they will have separation of church and state in the new Syria. Now, if you believe that, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you.
Well, I think, of course, my concern is that this is such an unstable area now, of course. If certainly they're able to overthrow all the existing governments and they start having elections, it'll be one man, one vote, one time. And the only real organized group over there that I can see is the Muslim Brotherhood that has the organization that's necessary to win elections. You can't just thrust democracy onto people who've never had democracy, create political parties out of nothing. And should the Muslim Brotherhood take control of that region of the world, we're in real trouble.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
People are becoming more aware of the dangers of fluoride in their drinking water. We're offering you a proven way to remove more than 95% of this dangerous chemical which threatens your good health. It's the Whole House Fluoride Removal System, available right now from Radio Liberty. This system will also remove aluminum, manganese, arsenic, lead, and most heavy metals. Your fear regarding these dangerous chemicals in the water you drink can be eased by getting more information from RadioLiberty.com. Go to RadioLiberty.com right now and find out all you need to know about protecting your home's precious water supply. Read the information about the Whole House Water Fluoride Removal System and order one. Free shipping is included in every purchase. You can also call 1-800-544-8927. Where's that information? RadioLiberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927.
Destabilize the Syrian government. John referred to the fact that a number of Syrian troops had been killed. I hadn't even heard about that. How many Syrian troops have been killed?
120 Syrian soldiers were killed in the northern parts of Syria. And now the Syrians are fleeing across the border into Turkey in the last 48 hours because they know that massive retaliation is coming. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood is really capable of initiating that kind of a reprisal operation. Now, a lot of the young kids that led the Arab Spring were trained by an American charity called Freedom House, something that Eleanor Roosevelt started, and it's to spread democracy around the world. And we've learned from WikiLeaks that our State Department was told that these young people were all being trained in 2008 to start a series of revolutions 3 years from now, in other words, in 2011.
In other words, the revolutions that we're seeing are right on time, and they were really, of course, instigated by young people trained in the United States for just this purpose. Is that
exactly
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Sure.
And the Muslim Brotherhood was not involved in the Arab Spring at all. They only, you know, jumped on the bandwagon at the very end. But these young kids are claiming they're not afraid of the Muslim Brotherhood. The young man who was the senior officer of Google, for example, said, look, if we can organize a revolution on Facebook, winning an election is going to be easier. Because we have this built-in organization, we are the only ones in contact with the young voters. And if we can turn out the young people in Egypt, that's all we need to sweep all the parties aside. I hope he's right. We'll know in September. Because the polls show that groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamist extremist groups, only get about 20 to 25% of the vote in Islamic countries, whether it's in South Asia or in the Arab world. So it's entirely possible, you know, that the modern, more secular Egyptian kids, if they can organize their turnout, through Facebook and Twitter and the other electronic media, they could very well surprise everyone. But we, you know, it's a roll of the dice, Dr. Stan. We'll have to wait in September and see what happens, because the pessimists are saying that the Muslim Brotherhood has broken all its promises. They are going to run a candidate for prime minister, and they are going to gain a majority of the seats in parliament. I hope that's not true.
Well, I hope it isn't true, but I fear that it may well be true. And I would just say for our listeners, those of you who listen to our program regularly, will remember that in mid-October, and I was told by our friend Lindsay Williams that he had been told that by within 4 to 6 months, there would be a major conflict in the Middle East, and of course the price of oil would rise, and he used the term $150 a barrel. Well, it hasn't gotten there yet, but it's gone up considerably. It's gotten up to $110 a barrel. But I had no idea what he was talking about. I mean, how could anybody anticipate there was going to be a major conflict? Oh, it's going to be a war with Iran. I said, no. I was told I'd specifically asked Lindsay to ask that question of his gentleman who was very close to the mm-hmm. people who really run the war and run the world. And this gentleman said, no, it's not going to be a war with Iran. Well, he said, what is the conflict going to be? It's going to be a conflict. Well, of course, it wasn't until mid-December that we saw the first inklings of this, breaking out of unrest, first in Tunisia and then in Egypt. And now John tells us, of course, a lot of this was instigated by young people trained 3 years ago in the United States under Freedom House. So I think that sometimes things that go on are scripted. You go right ahead.
Yeah, the irony is that the oil prices did shoot up enormously for a short period of time, but they're falling steadily now. That the Saudis have said that a price of $120 a barrel of oil, that $40 of that price is due solely to Wall Street speculators. And the Saudis warned, 3 years ago that sooner or later, these speculators, the bubble would burst because people will just stop buying oil at a certain price. The Saudis are right. Americans have begun to conserve again. They did this under Jimmy Carter, and it absolutely crushed the international oil cartels. And oil prices plummeted under Reagan. There had been this whole phony rumor under Carter that I describe in the book, The Secret War Against the Jews, where Carter was told, oh, the Arabs are running out of oil, the Russians are going to invade and seize what little oil is left, so you should be nice to the American oil companies and remove the price caps on domestic oil. And Carter surprised them by saying, no, I'm not going to raise any price caps. I'm going to tell the Americans to go for conservation, and he did. And it absolutely broke the backs of the cartels, and the oil prices plummeted. What we're seeing now is oil prices now are declining week by week as we head into the summer season. Traditionally, gasoline prices go up at this time of year. because more and more people are driving on vacations. But I think Americans are taking vacations, but they're taking them closer to home. And no one is buying the oil. 60% of America's oil consumption every day is for gasoline used in private automobiles. And if the American people would just drive 10% less or 20% less, that would cripple the oil cartels. So conservation, immediate conservation, seems to be the order of the day. That in because of this economic situation we're in, no one can afford to pay these high prices for oil. And if the oil is unbought, the prices are dropping and dropping and dropping. A lot of us think that, you know, what I call the good guys in the intelligence community believe that we're never going to win the war on terror until we stop buying Arab oil. We simply have to find a better form of alternative energy, and we've made some significant progress on that, which I hope we'll be hearing more about in the next year or two to come.
Now, are these some new methods of generating electricity? Because, of course, we hear about sun and wind. I don't think that's very efficient means of intent.
No, they're not. They're not efficient at all. What we did was we hired a group of former Russian scientists after the fall of the Soviet Union and paid them for the last 4 or 5 years to work on pure research. And what they've done is to make an entirely new form of manufacturing that melts metal without heat. And that way they can make the holy grail of alternative energy, which is the super solar cell made of indium and gallium. And it's enormously expensive to make either of those elements. But we found a way to make them in a dirt cheap way, because we can make them without heat. A solar cell made of indium and gallium is 5 times more efficient than an existing solar cell. So even without government subsidies or tax credits, it should be able to produce electricity at about 2 cents a kilowatt. The average American pays between 10 and 15 cents a kilowatt. Existing solar cells cost 50 cents a kilowatt hour. And wind farms at around $1 and up. So 2 cents a kilowatt would make it the cheapest form of energy in the earth. I think we're a couple of years away from that. We've done all the early pilot programs, and it looks extremely good. But it's going to take that kind of a quantum leap in science before we have a cheap, efficient, reliable alternative to petrochemicals.
Well, I just hope and pray that this thing will work out, because without power, why, of course, you can't have an industrialized society. And if you don't have an industrialized society, of course, you do not have a prosperous society. And so it's going to be very interesting, and I just hope, what do you think, 5 years, 2 years, how soon will we know?
I think pilot projects in 2 years, and in 5 years we're going to see most American homes are going to be buying solar shingles to cover their home, and then sell the excess power back to the grid for industrial use. And you will see, you know, people switching to electric cars, because it's, why would you buy a gasoline-powered car when you can charge your car at home for free? And, you know, this same new process that we've discovered also allows you to create super batteries. So instead of 100 miles on a battery, you might get 400 or 500 miles on a battery. And that would really make it a practical alternative, because it's no good to have a green alternative if it's too expensive or it's too difficult to work with. You know, we have to have something that works in the real world. But yeah, I think real world solutions are going to come certainly in the 5 to 10 year window.
Well, I just hope and pray you're right, because we need that. It's a need that, as long as we are dependent upon Arab oil, why, of course, we are going to continue depleting our reserves. You know, we're sending the largest part of our trade deficit is in oil, the oil revenues. And of course, the only good thing about that is, of course, that we got some sort of a deal worked out with the Saudis where we buy their oil and then they buy our T-bonds. How long that'll persist, I really don't know.
I'm afraid it'll only persist until August. There are actually wingnuts in the Republican Party that are going to destroy the American Treasury bond system by defaulting on our debts in August.
You really think they're going to default?
Yes, I think that they're going to. Oh, just default for a couple of days. The Chinese government came out today and said even a couple of days would be a disaster. If America defaults on its debt and has late payments for a couple of days, that will lower America's bond rating. And China, quite frankly, wants to dump the dollar in favor of the euro, because the Chinese hold now $3 trillion of American debt. And if the American dollar keeps declining, then China sees their investments withering away, whereas the euro keeps gaining against the dollar. The Saudis have told the Chinese, don't even think about dumping the dollar, because if you do that, that will hurt Saudi investments in America. And the Saudis have said, if you, China, dump the dollar in favor of the euro, then we, Saudi Arabia, will see that you don't ever get a drop anymore of Arab gas. So it's an interesting blackmail party. You know, everybody has a pistol pointed at the other guy's head, and you just hope that nobody pulls the trigger. But if the Republican Tea Party people go through and refuse to raise the debt limit in August, I mean, you could see the beginning of a worldwide Great Depression. Not the kind of recession we've been having, but a true world depression.
And yet, of course, the problem that we have is the fact that nobody wants to face the fact that you can't keep raising your debt limit indefinitely. I mean, basically, of course, when Obama came in, why the Republicans worked out a deal with Obama, we were going, of course, actually increase spending and cut taxes. Well, I'm all in favor of cutting taxes, but you can't increase spending and cut taxes.
No.
Because, of course, now, of course, debt is going up, you know, about $1.4 to $1.6 trillion during this one year.
This is how we should look at the debt. The day that Obama took office, he said, I inherited $11.2 trillion of George Bush's debt. And he also left Obama with a huge recession. And, you know, the Japanese told Obama, look, whatever you do, don't do what we did. We had a real estate bubble burst in Japan, and we followed traditional conservative doctrines, and we had a recession that lasted 10 years. So whatever you do, throw a lot of money into the prime the pump right away. Doesn't matter where you put it, but pump that money into the economy, loaded up front in year one. Which, so Obama borrowed $1.8 trillion on top of the $11.2 he inherited and primed the pump. And I think he kept us from falling into another Great Depression. I think it was a roll of the dice. Most economists now are saying, yep, Obama did the right thing. But people don't realize that we still have this $11.2 trillion Bush debt hanging over our heads. You know, Cheney went around saying that deficits don't matter. Well, they don't matter if you're a millionaire, I guess. But they certainly matter to us and to our grandchildren, who are going to have to bear the burden of this debt. So I think we have to return to the policies. You know, Jack Kennedy balanced the budget. Bill Clinton balanced the budget. We have to go back to the era of the Democratic centrists, who are fiscal conservatives. Because if we let the Republicans, who claim they're fiscal conservatives, but actually they're in favor of corporate welfare, they're in favor of tax breaks for billionaires. You know, their spending on the credit side of the sheet is welfare for the super rich. And so $3 trillion of that, just in the Bush tax credits alone, took place. That has to stop. So yeah, we've got to cut spending on the corporate welfare. Enron and Exxon don't need American money. Cut spending on the welfare subsidies for tax breaks for the super rich. They don't need subsidies. If you're going to spend any money, spend it on education.
Well, I really believe that a pox on both political parties. I think that this and either an awful lot of big money went into Obama's campaign, just like an awful lot of big money went into Bush's campaign. And suddenly the billionaires were putting, I mean, George Soros, one of the largest, certainly sources of funding for Obama. But, I mean, Bush certainly betrayed the American people. And but Obama really, of course, is not just 1.4 trillion, but he started with an $11.2 trillion debt.
Right.
Today we have a $14.3 trillion debt. So he's given us another $3 trillion here over the last couple of years. So I put a pox on both of them. I don't trust either side.
I'm afraid that's very much the American consensus. My sense, and perhaps I'm politically biased, is that I think that we should throw the Republicans out of the House of Representatives and return, the Democrats to power, and so we've got to get the economy moving again. Because as the economy rises, revenues rise, and that's probably the best way to work our way out of a recession rather than dramatic cuts in spending.
But, of course, the difficulty is we cannot get the economy going as long as we have open borders, at least in my estimation. Basically, we've sent almost 8 million jobs overseas, and those jobs are not coming home. If I was a corporate executive and I could go over there and not pay any taxes, not have to pay any taxes, tariffs to get my products back in the United States.
I think you're going to see more and more. I saw Alabama this week voted to enact a huge set of state criminal laws prohibiting anyone from giving a ride to an illegal immigrant, employing them, giving them paperwork. So this makes the Arizona crackdown on illegal immigration look like kitty camp. So this is what's going to happen. The states are in revolt. They're going to close off immigration by cracking down criminally on anyone they find within their state borders.
Well, you hang on here. We've just got about 3 more minutes, and we want you to wrap up your thoughts on the Muslim Brotherhood, which, of course, I think is a very real threat, both Sydney and in the Near East, Middle East, and even in the United States. John, let's just wrap up your thoughts on the Muslim Brotherhood and, I guess, the secret war against the Jews, which we really didn't. Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the 4 gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
Area, the intelligence community. He worked certainly there at the Justice Department for a number of years. And, of course, he is a prolific writer. We carry all three of his books, America's Nazi Secret, Unholy Trinity, The Secret War Against the Jews. We recommend all of them. If you want to understand how American corporations and American banks build up Adolf Hitler, not only before World War II, but during World War II, and built the weapons that the Nazi used to kill our boys with. Why, first, you need to get the book America's Nazi Secret by John, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, and Trading with the Enemy by Charles Higham. That's a trilogy. We have these books here so you can get hold of them, and so you can begin to have some idea what's going on. To understand the background of the Muslim Brotherhood, the game, the book is The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, I think that those of you who listen to our program regularly will realize, of course, that I believe that this whole thing is set up long-term planning, that they are intending at this time to topple all of the Muslim and Arab nations, and then, of course, to bring them under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then we're going to have a great war over there, and I'm not sure how it's going to line up, but I think it's going to be a frightening time. And I think it's going to have a devastating effect on our economy. And this will be used to justify the collapse in the value of the American dollar. And we can always blame it on the Muslim Brotherhood or somebody else, rather than admit this is all part of a plan to destroy the value of our currency, impoverish our people, so they can bring about their one-world government, their one-world financial system and currency, their one world religion, with the destruction of Christianity, which is what they want, which is why they took God and prayer out of our schools, and then install their one world ruler. I said, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And then, of course, you need to hear one of our talks, either The Secret, The Forbidden Secret, or The Dark Secret, or all three together. There are syllabuses with Forbidden Secret and The Dark Secret. And then, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, you're in a position to help Radio Liberty, and we picked up a couple of new stations, we just have to keep expanding. Wherever people hear the truth, many of them will accept it. They'll understand it. So people are looking for truth. They're trying to make some sense out of a world gone mad. And where they hear it, well, they start out listening to us, they think we're crazy, and then after a while, they're afraid we're not. And that's what one of my friends once told me. We used to think you were crazy, but now we're afraid you're not. And I'm really not. I've been at this for 49 years. I've made a lot of mistakes, but I got a pretty good grasp of it now. If you want to understand the spiritual aspect of it, certainly Constance Cumby's book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, her DVD, The Emergence, her four CD set, The Aquarian Conspiracy. That's The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, Aquarian Conspiracy, the DVD, The Emergence. But if you're in a position to help us, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We've mentioned we have a lot of great health products, prostate support for men, menopause support for women, immune support for people who are having trouble with the immune system. We carry both quercetin and curcumin, which you should have on hand in case of a nuclear attack. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will actually go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, our permission and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, for the next hour, we hope they're going to be the views of William Grigg. We haven't got him on the line yet, so... But basically, as we look and see what's happening here in the United States financially, why, of course, they keep telling us, oh, well, you know, what's if we just get the economy going again? If we just get the manufacturers going again, put people back to work. Ladies and gentlemen, there's not going to be an increase in manufacturing because we've systematically and intentionally transferred on the major manufacturing of certainly of so many products overseas, and we're talking about certainly our automotive manufacturing. We're transferring our automotive manufacturing, our steel production, our electronics. You just try to find a television set made here in the United States, or a cell phone made in the United States, or a fax made in the United States. This has been done intentionally. So many of our service jobs, answering services, are overseas. You know, when you call in to get report a problem, if you get somebody very frequently, they've got that sort of Indian accent, sounds like they, you know, over there in New Delhi, and that's because they are in New Delhi. We have programs by which certainly they can do the engineering in India. We have programs by which they can do architectural design in India. We have a system by which they can do legal work in India, do the research for legal cases. We have a system by which they can actually read CT scans and x-rays. We can send it over electronically and have it back here within an hour or so at a third or a quarter of the cost if they were being read here in the United States. And this is all part of the program, organized, laid out in the Earth Charter for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and among nations. And what they really want to do is impoverish the American people. And they're doing a very good job, but they can't let the American people know this is happening, not by accident, but by intent. That's why you need to read Agenda 21. You need to get the Global Biodiversity Assessment. You get the summary in my Sustainable Development Syllabus. You need to read the Earth Charter. And you need to read the Ten Commandments from the Pit of Hell on the Georgia Guidestones. Remember that? That's A-G-G-E. A-G-G-E. And these are all available through Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. But right now we have William Grigg. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. It's always a blessing to be with you. Thank you so much.
Well, tell us what's going on.
I do think that we're going to have to start talking a little bit more about the fact that we've reclined so long in this country on the velvet glove that has been used to cushion the iron fist that we've grown inured to that posture, not understanding what's beneath it. And now the velvet glove is being removed and the cushion has been taken away. And we're starting to feel that iron fist. And this is only going to get worse as the economic depression deepens and our rulers grow more brazen. So we have to steel ourselves against what we're likely to see in the very near future.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand, basically, because our founding fathers wanted to limit the power of government. They didn't want government that could take care of us, because they knew a government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave has got to be able to control you. But it's been so nice having a government that would provide welfare and would provide health care. And that's the velvet glove. But as William points out, within that velvet glove is an iron fist. If we're about to feel it, we'll be right back. William, pick up the story.
There really is no limit to the number of ways that any of us or all of us could find himself or ourselves on the receiving end of lethal violence meted out by the government that's ruling us right now. And this apparatus of government, as you point out, Dr. Stan, has been completely emancipated from the restraints of law. And it's now in the possession of an oligarchy that doesn't recognize any limits on their ambitions. Any of us at any time could find himself impoverished or killed or imprisoned, not because we've done something that is morally wrong or legally wrong according to any law that is worthy of that description, but because of the fact that we are cocooned in this dense network of enactments that have the force of law for the purpose of rendering us helpless. This is a principle I've talked about before. The point of the law of the Old Testament, according to the Book of Romans, was to give us some illustration of how desperately wicked we are and how offensive our sin is to our Creator, absent His grace and His redemptive influence. In other words, it's to convict us of sin. It's not to make us righteous. It's to convict us of sin. Well, the state, presuming to exercise the station of God, creates all these enactments for the purpose of practically criminalizing everything we do if we do anything that is productive or have any interaction with other people. And the purpose is to leave us utterly vulnerable and utterly at the mercy of the people who exercise the authority. Not the authority. Authority, of course, is legitimate power exercised pursuant to covenant or contract or in harmony with God's law. We're talking about power, not authority here. But the power exercised by those who presume to rule us. And here's a really good example, just from a couple of days ago in Stockton, California. You may have discussed this in some of your other programs, Dr. Stan. There's a young father by the name of Kenneth Wright, who a couple of days ago, 6 in the morning, heard an insistent pounding on his door. And he didn't know who it would be who would be waking him up at 6 in the morning. So he went out wearing his underwear as the pounding grew to a crescendo. And as he reached for the door in a panic saying, "Look, I'm going to open the door," the door was suddenly thrust open through the use of a battering ram, and in came a 15-member police tactical squad. He was grabbed by his collar, thrown down to the floor, handcuffed, rudely behind his back, taken out, thrown first face down in the lawn in front of his house, and then hustled off to a police cruiser, where he spent 6 hours in his ragged, torn underwear, while this scrum of functionaries rifled through his home, terrorizing his young children, in search of what he wasn't told until afterwards.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, William is talking about another instance here, right here in California, where, of course, a gentleman rousted out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning in his underwear. Of course, goes to the front door just before it's broken down, and he is thrown down and handcuffed and taken outside and roughed up and thrown down and then taken off to prison. He has no idea what this is all about. They did come in with a warrant. They didn't. They broke down the door. They went through his belongings. And what were they looking for?
Well, actually, they did have a warrant, but they didn't show it to him afterwards. It used to be, when this was a reasonably free country governed by common law, as dictated by the Anglo-Saxon tradition, a police officer couldn't invade your home without showing you a warrant. And a warrant, of course, would list your address and who lived there and what they're specifically looking for. Now, there was a warrant that was issued by a U.S. District Court to conduct a search of this property, but it wasn't necessary to bang in the door and come in a guns-drawn tactical posture in order to enforce this warrant. Here's the account from the Daily Mail, which is summarizing a local news account from ABC TV Channel 10 in Stockton. I look out of my window and I see 15 police officers dressed in his boxer shorts. Mr. Wright said he rushed downstairs and was about to open the door when it was kicked open. An officer then grabbed him by the neck, dragging him out onto the front lawn. His 3, 7, and 11-year-old children were also removed by officers and put in a waiting police car. So the whole family was put under arrest at gunpoint. He had his knee on my back and I had no idea why they were there, Mr. Wright said. They put me in handcuffs in that hot patrol car for 6 hours, traumatizing my kids. The search warrant had to do with his estranged and absent wife, who no longer lived at the residence. She was wanted on criminal charges having to do with fraud and embezzlement because she was delinquent on her federal student loans. So the Department of Education, acting through its Office of Inspector General, sent a tactical team with the help of the Stockton police to conduct a daybreak armed raid on a suburban residence in Stockton, California, that involved the very real possibility of lethal force over a matter of delinquent student loans. This was, in other words, a collection action. Now, since this was initially...
But she didn't live there.
She didn't live there. He hadn't seen her, he hadn't talked to her. They were estranged. They were probably going to be divorced. So it wasn't his debt. She wasn't there. And on top of that, there's no crime of violence involved here. There are no exigent circumstances.
Well, certainly there was no question then that he might be going to flush drugs down the toilet.
Exactly. He wasn't going to destroy the evidence, because the evidence would be paperwork, it would be computer files, it would be on thumb drives or on CDs. The point was, even if you're dealing with exigent circumstances, unless you're dealing with respect to evidence, if you're dealing with a threat to an innocent person who's being held hostage, that's a different proposition than if you are dealing with the possibility that evidence will be destroyed. If you're trying to find evidence you do not have, under the standard conventions and canons of the common law and the Constitution, as a police officer, you do not have the right to kick in a door and throw a gun in somebody's face and force him to the floor and humiliate him in front of his family simply because it suits your convenience. That's not how the Fourth Amendment and its state analogs define the search function according to the standard and necessary procedure.
So what was the result of this? I mean, did he get an apology from the police?
Well, he got a perfunctory apology, which means that, hey, we're sorry we ruined your door, and they grabbed a couple of pieces of scrap lumber, and they boarded up the hole that they had created with their siege engine when they were splintering it needlessly, because he was opening the door when it was kicked in. But what he said is, all I want is an apology for my kids and for them to get me a new door. And then later, by way of summation, he said, people who have student loans, pay your bills, take care of your credit. If you don't believe me, this could be you one morning at 6 o'clock, which apparently was the message they were trying to send. But
basically, is he responsible for his wife's loan?
No. No, he had no legal, civil, or moral responsibility for his wife's student loan.
Well, then he should get himself a lawyer and sue the police.
Has.
This is the only thing that we can do to stop this, because basically, because up above north of me, in my understanding, that Half Moon Bay, their police played some games like this, and they got a lawsuit and bankrupted that they simply had to do away with the police and suddenly get the police coverage from someplace else, until we start bankrupting the community governments that are misusing their police power. This is not going to change, and I think we would find an awful lot of sympathetic juries today.
I would hope so. The problem here is that the Stockton police were implicated in this only to the extent of providing a patrol car.
Well, but if they allowed it, I mean,
yeah.
Certainly the federal government cannot come in without their permission.
Yeah.
And if they give their permission, then they are implicit in this, and they have the full responsibility for any psychological harm. The local police can say to the feds and to these, now where did the SWAT team come from?
The SWAT team came from the Department of Justice.
Well, then, of course, then the local police are responsible because they could have said, you can't do it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's something that the county sheriff should have done. The county sheriff has the responsibility to interpose himself and his office on behalf of residents of that county who are threatened by any kind of criminal violence, whether it is carried out by private entities or by the federal government. Within the county, the sheriff, who is elected and accountable to the residents of that county, is pretty much the supreme peace officer whose duty it is.
Of course, this is obviously an effort to intimidate people.
Yeah.
The government wants to intimidate people. When the government fears the people, you have freedom. When the people fear the government, you have tyranny. And what they're trying to do is terrorize the public. And I think that this story should be told far and wide,
definitely.
And that somebody should be fired. If not fired, if they are not fired, why the government shows that they fully support this sort of thing, exactly as it was after 9/11. Nobody was fired. 3,000 Americans are dead,
exactly.
And nobody's fired.
Yeah, they're ratifying after the fact what you could, I guess, charitably call the incompetence and criminal negligence that led to 9/11, which, of course, means that what they're saying is that that is entirely suitable and appropriate behavior for so-called public servants. It's not as if they're saying that they wanted that to happen necessarily, although there's reason to think that that was the case, but by refusing to fire anybody, what they're saying is that this is the type of performance that is perfectly acceptable. This is the sort of performance for which taxpayer money, that is to say money extorted at gunpoint from tax victims, should be paid for. And in the case of what happened in Stockton, California, you've got a situation where I think the police department, the local police department, should be sued by way of putting pressure on them to implead the federal government in this crime. I think that the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office should be sued for nonfeasance of duty because they had a duty to interpose on behalf of Mr. Wright and his family when they were put on the receiving end of a criminal assault by the federal government. And there should be an action brought against the Department of Inspector General and against the federal agent whose name was on the warrant, because this is something, Howard Nance is the name of the federal agent who swore out the warrant, in swore out the affidavit that was used for the search warrant. But to say, Dr. Stan, this is an act of intimidation, which is to say it's an act of state terrorism. The purpose of this is to demonstrate that they are utterly pitiless and remorseless in using potentially lethal force in federal collection actions having to do with student loans. Those are loans that you cannot discharge through bankruptcy. Unlike just about any other kind of debt, you cannot use bankruptcy to relieve yourself of the burden of a federal student loan, which is one reason I never got federal student loans.
But you don't have to use guns to actually enforce the law.
No, there's no other collection agency in the world I'm aware of that would do that kind of thing. Only the federal government would do it, and it would only do it against citizens of this insignificant stature. You don't see the IRS sending a SWAT team to collect the back taxes from Timothy Geithner, who's now, of course, the Secretary of the Treasury and who didn't pay his taxes for, I believe, it was 4 years in the first decade of the 21st century. You don't see a SWAT team being sent to collect money, collect on loans that have been granted on the so-called full faith and credit of the United States, which means the taxpayers, either through direct taxation or through inflation, that have been granted to politically favored corporations. If you owe tens of millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars or tens of billions of dollars to the federal government, the SWAT team is not going to come to your corporate offices and drag out your CEO and your CFO. If, on the other hand, you owe maybe $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 on a federal student loan and you've been delinquent for a couple of quarters, then they'll send a SWAT team to the house of your estranged spouse at 6 in the morning and splinter the door and terrorize the entire family at gunpoint in order to make a point. That's the type of a system we're living under right now. And what manner of government does that kind of thing, engages in that type of brutal, conspicuous, gratuitous criminal violence against people who are perfectly helpless? It's the type of a government that has removed that proverbial velvet glove.
Oh, I should never forget. I just have to tell a little story here. When I lived in South Africa for a while, we had a problem. My income tax form was filled out improperly, and they claimed I owed a large amount of money, but actually they owed me money. I'd overpaid my income tax. So I returned to the United States, or opened my office here. And one day when I was away from the office, two IRS agents came with a padlock and a hasp, and they were going to padlock my office for non-payment of taxes. Well, since I wasn't there, they didn't padlock the office. But anyway, I called them, and I said, if you were here, and the fellow was very gruff, and yeah, and I said, oh, did you come to bring me the money that you owe me? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I got a nice letter from the government saying that they owed me money, and I thought maybe you'd come to bring it. He said, I want to see the letter. And so we faxed it to him. And when he call back, he was the nicest person. He said, you know, things are so confusing, we really don't know what's going on.
Oh, how nice.
We have no idea what's going on in Washington, D.C., and really, this wasn't handled very well, was it? I said, no. Thank you so much. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's all about fear and intimidation. Go right ahead, William.
Dr. Stan, I don't know if I mentioned a couple of weeks.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Know that so many federal agencies that have no need at all for law enforcement have enforcement agents who have the right to carry weapons to terrorize the people. So now we find out that NASA has a police force because somebody was trying to sell a moon rock, and of course they did a sting operation. And what happened, William?
What happened is the woman was arrested, and a very small item was sent under the wire services talking about this interesting and peculiar story. But those of us who are of a suspicious cast of mind, hopefully that will be all of us, but of course it isn't, regarding government power and the enforcement agencies of the various federal departments, took away from this the interesting fact that NASA has its own police force. And if NASA has its own police force, then it stands to reason that just about any other agency that is actually involved in administration and the imposition of regulations and so forth. NASA doesn't do that sort of thing for the most part, unless you're involved in something having to do with near orbital space. You're most likely not to have any run-ins with NASA. I think that the Federal Aviation Administration probably handles just about everything else having to do with atmospheric travel for both commercial and private purposes. But NASA isn't involved in regulation or enforcement. It has its own police force and investigative arm. It stands to reason that any other bureaucracy that claims the authority, I'm not endorsing the claim, I'm saying that they claim the authority to regulate our activities, is going to have some kind of a proprietary enforcement arm. And we just learned a few days ago the Department of Education has tactical teams, SWAT teams, and that they can recruit at whim elements of nominally local police forces in order to conduct daybreak raids as debt collection actions. And this reminded me of nothing so much, well, actually reminded me of two things, the first of which was that line from the Declaration of Independence that excoriated King George and his administration for erecting a multitude of new offices and sending hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. The thing was, even the Redcoats didn't behave this way. And so the second thing it reminded me of was, of course, the behavior of secret police in the former Soviet Union, or in communist Cuba, or any other similar haven of enlightenment, where you have the practice of sending secret police at the most inconvenient time, the time which is best calculated to leave somebody psychologically on edge and vulnerable. It's usually daybreak or late at night, the proverbial 3 a.m. knock or the proverbial 6 a.m. knock. That's happening every single day in this country, and it's not just for drug enforcement actions, which are bad enough if you're dealing with a nonviolent offense that shouldn't be a criminal offense in the first place, meaning, of course, consumption or small-scale commerce in substances that are considered illicit right now but were perfectly legal 120 years ago, back when there was a modicum of Christian discipline in the population. But it's happening now for such things as debt collection, student loan collection. And so it stands to reason, once again, that something very ominous has happened in the complexion and disposition of this government ruling us. And once again, I think the most important thing that we can understand here is that when they're willing to do this for public consumption, it's because, first of all, they want to terrorize and intimidate us. And secondly, they believe that the population has become sufficiently bovine that the population will put up with this, that will take the desired message, and it will behave in exactly the torpid and submissive way that our self-appointed rulers require of us. And it's important to recognize as well that the really unusual thing about this is that the federal government got involved. But if you take a look at the nature of government schools today, your local, speaking in geographic terms, not in terms of accountability, your local schools, which are no more local than your local police anymore, architecturally resemble jails. And in terms of the way that they are regimented, and in terms of the increasingly high-profile presence of police would be concerned, are starting to resemble internally, and in terms of policy and practice, these jails and cells that they resemble architecturally. And so, while it may seem out of the ordinary, and certainly noteworthy, that you have the department, the Federal Department of Education, collecting or trying to collect on a student loan at gunpoint, you take a look at what's going on in your local government school, you see the kids are being habituated in thinking of themselves as inmates of a prison society from the time they're old enough to be carrying school books and be ferried to and from this building on a yellow school bus.
What I'm concerned about is there really are people in government who want a dictatorship. How do we know that? Because they embrace the socialist philosophy. And if you read about the socialist philosophy, well, I think it was in the George Bernard Shaw said, you know, under this system, you'll be forcibly fed, housed, and clothed whether you like it or not. And if you're not felt worthy, you'll be put to death.
On the subject of training children in government schools to be properly submissive subjects of a dictatorship, Peter Cosgrove, the deputy director of the National Institute of Justice, that's a Justice Department affiliate, the National Institute of Justice's Law Enforcement and Corrections Technology Center for the Southeast, said the following: you have kids in school being educated in life, and in prison you have a similar situation of people being re-educated. In theory, they're not far apart. In the administrative side, you're trying to regulate and control a large group of people, so So there are a lot of similarities. So if we're developing a technology, we can use it in both areas.
But at least in the prison, you have discipline. In our schools, you have no discipline. And, of course, what a tragedy is that our young children can go all through school. The parents can't discipline. The teachers can't discipline them. The principals can't discipline them. But when they get in prison, they'll learn about discipline. Well, I think it would be far better to teach them right and wrong and discipline before they end up being sent to prison, perhaps
where
they will spend the rest of their life. It is not simply by accident that today one in every 100 adults is in prison. One in every 33 adults in America is in prison, probation, or parole. Does that suggest maybe we've made a mistake someplace in giving values to our people? Go right ahead with it.
Well, in prison they can learn a useful trade, too. So there are a couple of other distinctions that can be drawn between those government institutions. But what's happened, as a really fascinating new book called Lockdown High by Annette Fuentes points out, is that we have created, well, not we, the government and elite ruling us, have created this school-to-prison pipeline that results in exactly the type of disparity that you described, Dr. Stan, in terms of the number of people who are in prison or jail or parole. The largest such population in the world right now, probably the largest such population in human history, in this purported land of the free. And that, as you illustrate, or as you point out, Dr. Stan, illustrates that we do not have a society that is properly founded in terms of
Hold that thought here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William is simply pointing out that we're having a real problem as far as an orderly society. And I had pointed out that one in every 100 American adults is in prison. One out of every 33 Americans is in prison, probation, or parole today. Something's wrong with the system. Well, of course, when you take God and prayer out of our schools, when you tell our young people there's no right or there's no wrong, and then when you poison their minds, and of course, especially with the black population, because if you fluoridate the water with hydrofluorosilicic acid, these young people get lead encephalopathy. That's why one in every 33 every three young black men today between 21 and 31 are in prison, probation, or parole. It's lead encephalopathy. They're poisoning their minds with lead. That's the whole different story. But it's exactly what they did in ancient Rome. They lined the aqueducts with lead. They got lead encephalopathy. And when the enemy came, why, of course, there was no one there to fight. They all had a form of lead encephalopathy, and this is what you're seeing in the black population in America today. And the fact that even the black leaders who know what I'm saying will not speak out against it is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. Well, before we go on, William, I would certainly like to have you tell our listeners how they can get to your blog site, how they can listen to your radio program, how they can find your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate that. My blog is called Pro Libertate, as is my radio program. The blog is found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. An easier way to find it is just to go to a search engine and type in my last name, Grigg, G-R-I-G-G, and then Pro Libertate, P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E. That should take you right to Pro Libertate, the blog. Try to update it between 2 and 4 times a week. The essays tend to be 1,000 and 3,000 words, so there's a great deal of work involved in writing one of them, and so I don't update that as often as some other bloggers might for passing ephemeral notes on what's happening in contemporary politics and culture. I post a lot of my Facebook page, so any of your listeners who are on Facebook should check out my Facebook page where I do more conventional blogging, just because it's the sort of thing that lends itself to that type of a medium. But the main blog page is Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Pro Libertate Radio is broadcast every Sunday afternoon from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on the Liberty News Radio Network. LibertyNewsRadio.com is the website, LibertyNewsRadio.com. two-hour program, and it's a podcast, which means that we don't have interaction with callers. It's not a live radio program, and that has to do with austerity measures as much as anything else. I had been doing a daily and then a weekly program on Liberty News Radio, and then a budget crunch led them to dispense with my program because they could no longer afford to keep people employed there as producers, and then listener demand led them to offer me the program on the weekends doing the podcast, which are downloadable. You can access them there in the archive section or subscribe by way of iTunes if you're interested in getting the podcast. And Dr. Stan, you had mentioned that on my website there is a PayPal button that people can use to make donations if they are interested in doing so and have the means to offer a donation to help keep my enterprise going. And I am very grateful to you and to many, many of your listeners who've been very generous in helping me to provide for my family and to keep these enterprises going. This has been, as I've said before, a really interesting exercise in casting my bread upon the water. It's one of those things that I hadn't anticipated doing, and I found that we have been sustained in some ways almost miraculously, if not outright, by way of providential intervention to keep our family going and to keep me publishing and doing what I do. I am gratified and, to the depths of my soul, humbled by the fact that there are people who are interested in reading what I have to write and hearing what I have to say. It's something they don't have to do. I mean, reading what I have to say in my blog or listening to my radio program is a discretionary activity. It's something that people can choose to do or choose not to do. And it's gratifying beyond description to me that I'm saying things that are worthwhile to people and that so many people have generously provided to keep me and my family viable in these really terrifying economic times. So thank you. Thank you so much. God bless you for all you do and for all that your listeners are doing on our behalf. Thank you as well to them.
Well, we're glad to be able to help, and I'm just so I will tell our listeners I had the hardest time getting William to put that PayPal button up. He didn't want to put that PayPal button up.
No, I didn't.
And I just kept saying, William, every week, William, have you got the button up? And we had him talk to my son, and of course we guided him through. But suddenly we need to keep William there. He's doing a great job, and he is writing the monthly Radio Liberty letter, which gives me some time for some of the other projects we really need to get done. All right. Well, let's pick up the story we were talking certainly about the failure really of our system. You have to have a moral foundation for society. Of course, they took the God and prayer, the Bible, the Ten Commandments out of our society because they wanted to destroy the moral fabric of this nation. They've done a pretty good job of it. We've still got a lot of good people here, but certainly our churches have been fairly well neutralized. They're not speaking out on the really important issues. So we've got a few ministers who are, and it's amazing how many ministers listen to our program, and actually some of them even support us, and I'm sure they are having financial problems as well, and we do appreciate their support for our message. But we all need to be together, those people who love the Lord and believe, of course, that we are involved in a spiritual battle, and we need to restore those moral values that one time made America the envy of the world. But you pick up the story there, William.
I think that it's important to point out that the origins of the type of government under which we're living right now, speaking in biblical and in historical terms, are Babylonian. And it's interesting to me that in his thoroughly secular story of civilization, Will Durant, who toward the end of his life had very deep doubt about the virtue of doubt. He'd been raised as an atheist, as a socialist. He and his wife met when he was teaching at a commune in the early 20th century. She was a very young student who was precocious and very literate and more doctrinaire than he was about their leftist and humanist assumptions. But this multi-volume story of the history of civilization begins in the first volume, Our Oriental Heritage, by talking about Babylon, not talking about, of course, the Hebrews and the biblical account of man's moral development according to the creation and the created order and God's law, but rather talking about Babylon as the founding of society as he believed when he started out the survey. By the end of the survey, by the time he wrote Voltaire, The Age of Voltaire, Rousseau and Revolution, and then The Lessons of History, Will Durant had had a change of heart, and he died I believe, 1982. He actually took the Catholic sacraments on his deathbed because he had really changed his views about how the world was supposed to be organized. But as a secularist, as a humanist, as somebody who believed in collectivism, he wanted to trace our roots to Babylon. Why Babylon? Well, if you read the Bible, of course, Babylon began with the Tower of Babel, and it was an act of conscious rebellion against God's sovereignty by creating an order of politics in defiance of God's law. That was the point of the Tower of Babel. If you read in the Antiquities of the Jews by Flavius Josephus about Nimrod, the semi-legendary account of this figure who created Babylon, the account given in Josephus describes him as somebody who wanted to organize a social order in which everybody would be dependent on him and on his government. In other words, government was supplanting the role of God, was ordaining itself the master, the chief sovereign of the entire world and everything that pertained to it. And of course, later on in the New Testament, when we're reading about the temptation of the Lord, the final temptation, of course, was when Satan showed the kingdoms of the world in a vision and said, "All these things I will give to you if you will kneel down and worship me." Well, it's interesting, Jesus didn't dispute that description of how the kingdoms of the world function. What he said was, "Get thee behind me, Satan, basically, go away. Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God, and him alone will you worship." The point is that the system of governments we're talking about are rooted in the Babylonian model in which the government usurps the role of God.
And I really have always felt that Nimrod was a prototype, a predecessor of the Antichrist.
Oh, very much so. I mean, he was somebody who rebelled and wanted to incite rebellion against this order in which we recognize that we're all made in the image of God, we're all given, if you will, a moral operating system, we have a conscience, even without specific teaching about the particular precepts of God's law, there's a moral center of gravity in each of us, so we're left without excuse. We can see that order in nature, we can understand what is right, what is wrong, what is good, true, and beautiful, and what is, of course, evil and false and ugly. We can understand those things because that's something that was left in us as the imprint of our maker. And Nimrod was creating an order that inverted all this. He was, you know, portraying light as darkness and darkness as light, evil as good, and the opposite, as it says, I believe, in what, the fifth chapter of the book of Isaiah. And the thing is, when government usurps the role of God, those who are at the top of this social pyramid consider themselves to be God and consider the rest of us to be their creations, their playthings, their toys. They do not defer to the created order and recognize that each of us made in the image of our creator has rights that everybody else has to respect. You know, the golden rule, the first two great commandments, love your Lord, your God with all your heart, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those, of course, are of no account, no consequence. And in political terms, the non-aggression principle is something that doesn't apply to those who are at the top of this man-created, Nimrod-designed, anti-Christ, anti-God paradigm. And so you have situations like the one I described in Stockton, California. I mean, it seems like a rather picayune example when you contrast it with all the literally hundreds of millions of people who have been slaughtered by those who presume to be our rulers over the course of the last century, or at very least since 1789, when the French Revolution occurred, and that was the first modern totalitarian revolution. You take a look at all the hundreds of millions of people who've died as a result of this Babylonian model being given the power to work its evil without stint or limit. It seems like it's a little bit bizarre to say that this raid in Stockton, California is a manifestation of the same evil, but it is. And the point is, they do it because they can. They do it because they don't recognize any limits on their power. They don't consider us to be people with rights they are required to respect. We are, as was said in ancient Egypt under the reign of the Pharaoh, we are as cattle before these god men. That's something that Pharaoh insisted was the case, that he was somebody who was an exalted being who was radically different from the rest of humanity. Indeed, he wasn't truly human. He was somebody who partook of the nature of the gods, and so he had this unqualified power to rule over others. That's the Babylonian model as well, and that is the model of the Antichrist, whether you're talking about the figure described in Revelation or anybody else who denies the innate rights of individuals and defies the idea that there are any limits on his power. And in order to get people to submit to that order of rule, it's necessary to get a hold of the minds of people while they are malleable, while there's a certain ductility in terms of their moral perceptions and their moral values. And that's why these government schools are so important in terms of the lessons that they teach, not in terms of the substance of instruction, but in terms of the way these little societies are organized. From the time that they are very, very young, they're molded into a collective mindset where the most important inducement to rewards and recognition is to be a conformist, not to be somebody who conforms as a matter of chosen moral behavior to a law that he understands to be right, but to conform as dictated to by established authority, by established supposed authority. And so you have these rituals that are intended to create this sense of identity with the collective. And when people in these schools begin to display behaviors that suggest an unfortunate and perhaps incurable inclination towards rogue individualism, meaning they're asking questions about things that are arbitrary and not morally sound, then you have intervention often in the form of pharmacological assault on their personality, which is one of the reasons why these same government schools that have DARE programs that teach children to become the eyes and ears of the state in their homes and to look for misbehavior on the part of their parents that could end up with police intervention in the home, these same schools are dispensing Ritalin and other scheduled narcotics to children who display no symptoms of actual medical problems, you know, by way of curing them of their individuality. And suddenly we start hearing diagnoses about oppositional defiant disorder when kids turn 11, 12, or 13, particularly young males, and they start questioning things. They start pushing the limits of what they're permitted to do. They start expressing skepticism about the qualifications and credibility of adult figures. I mean, this is the sort of thing that happens because that's the way young men mature. And in some ways, this is unfortunate because it's part of our sin nature. You know, we are, for whatever reason, inclined to rebel. But there are ways in which this can be, if it is tempered by sound instruction rooted in an appreciation of our created nature, that can be tempered into a very useful trait. It can become the type of stubbornness that led a Martin Luther to say, "Here I stand, I can do no other, God help me, amen," you know, rather than submitting to something that he believed out of the depths of his soul represented the usurpation of God's rule. You know, that's opposition, that's defiance, but it's opposition by standing on what is true in defiance of that which is an enthroned evil. But the problem was, if Martin Luther had been sent to an American school today and had the same suite of behaviors and the same recipe in terms of his personality, he would have been diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder and quite probably doped up and made completely submissive and docile and deprived of his opportunity for leadership. The same would be true, of course, of people like Samuel Adams. The same would be true of people like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. You know, they would have been seen as people who suffered from some kind of clinical disorder of individualism that had to be cured through the proper intervention by medical authorities backed up by the people with guns and uniforms. That's going on in these godless collectivist schools in this country today. That explains our predicament in large measure, because people from the time that they have been old enough to see and participate in these activities have become inured to the idea that their duty is to do what the collective requires. And unfortunately, we reached a point now where that mindset and the mindset of those of us who still understand principled individualism are at loggerheads, and the crisis is upon us, and none of us is going to be left unchanged by its unfolding.
I think you're absolutely right, and we could certainly get into the other things, the way the poisoning of the minds with aspartame, it has an effect on the mind. Certainly the mercury, they put the fillings in, they vent the mercury, they give it to our shots, they put it in our light bulbs. The aluminum, of course, they're spraying it in the air, we get this in our IV shots, of course it's getting into our food supply. The fluoride, the lead, they know what they're doing, they just don't want us to know. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, once again, I want to tell you how much I admire and appreciate you and what you've done. And
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. Many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.